Good Thursday, everybody. Welcome into Stillman & Company here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe in once again for Jared Stillman. He's going to skip a start. He plans to be back in the rotation tomorrow. We hope that he's feeling better, though. I know he has been going through it over the last few days, but happy to be able to step in and help out. And we say hello to Mark Howard, who is with us again. Mark, how you doing?
I'm great, Chase.
Good to have you in again. And I want to start, I've been looking forward to talking to you all day because, David Culley is going to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. And I know, obviously, spent a lot of time in this area. He's from Sparta, played at Vanderbilt, coached at Vanderbilt, Austin Peay, MTSU. But you mentioned the other day, you obviously know him a little bit. But what's Houston getting in David Culley as their head coach?
They're getting a terrific human being. I've known David Culley, gosh, for like almost 30 years. I remember when he was still in the college game at Texas A&M, and David has made his way through the NFL. He's worked for Bill Cowher. He worked for Tampa Bay. I believe Sam Weich. He worked for Andy Reid for a long time at Philadelphia. Coach T.O., in fact, and got along with him. So that's a career achievement in and of itself. But David's been around for a long time, just a solid ball coach, a good leader, and he's going to be thrust in a CEO position. I just hope he gets to keep his quarterback. David's waited a long time for a chance to be a head coach, and I would hate to see them trade Deshaun Watson. At least if they do that, I hope they get a decent quarterback in return. But, I texted David, just delighted for him. And I know he's really excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, and it's certainly an interesting place to go into right now with everything happening with Deshaun Watson. Of course, the big news of the day is, and it's unfortunate for David Culley because it overshadows his announcement of being the head coach. But Deshaun Watson has officially asked for a trade from the Houston Texans. Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insider, was all over it earlier today.
So it is official now. Deshaun Watson will want out of Houston. The head coaching hire of David Culley makes no difference. It does not change his feelings one bit. Deshaun Watson has requested a trade from the Houston Texans. This now vaults to the top of the offseason storylines. We will wait to see where Deshaun Watson goes this offseason, but now we see how the Houston Texans handle a situation. Houston, you have a problem, officially. He has requested the trade. We have laid this all out. We have spelled this out in the previous weeks. We've said this was coming. We said this was happening, and it has happened. And actually, it happened weeks ago as we were talking about it. It's just now that we're finding out about it and have been able to confirm that the official request has come in. Additionally, he has not spoken to Deshaun Watson, to the new general manager, Nick Caserio, who got the job over 2 or 3 weeks ago. He has not spoken to Jack Easterby. He has not had phone conversations with members of that organization. So when we talk about the NBA of the NFL or the NFL of the NBA and players yielding their power, here we go. You see the muscle flex from Deshaun Watson there? It's time to flex. Now, the Houston Texans, again, will say that they don't want to trade Deshaun Watson. They're not interested in trading Deshaun Watson. But if Deshaun Watson is as dug in as we think he is, then they will trade Deshaun Watson.
Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insider. And, yeah, let's start with that part. Of course, they don't want to trade their franchise quarterback. They want to build around their franchise quarterback. But we've seen it before, and he referenced the NBA, that they may not have a choice. He's got the leverage right now. That's just the way it is. But we knew it was bad, but some of the stuff that I've been hearing and reading over the course of really the last few weeks, none of this is a huge surprise, but they came to him, they wanted his advice, and they went to dinner and talked about the direction of the franchise with the new GM and the new coach. And then went with a search firm and fired the search firm and all these different things. And now he hasn't talked to anybody. I mean, Mark, it's bad. It may be beyond repair. And that's unfortunate, like you said earlier, to David Culley coming in for his first head coaching opportunity.
It's just crazy to me that a franchise like the Texans would be an undesirable destination. It's a great city, you know, great ownership. You know, the McNair family, it will go all out to win. They've got one of the best stadiums in the league, you know, one of the best facilities, yet it's reached a point of critical mass to where Deshaun Watson, who's one of the most underutilized talents in the league, he wants out of there. And if he goes, I would imagine J.J. Watt would want out too, although he might not be as demonstrative about it because he's really tied to the community. But this is not a good place to be in if you're Houston. The one thing that Watson could bring would be some draft assets because Bill O'Brien bled the organization dry. And you know, Bill O'Brien is to me, a lot of the reason for this. I mean, he set the table. He put the organization in a horrible position. Apparently Jack Easterby is like red, you know, is like radioactive, you know, within the building. Yeah. And you get a different reaction about him from different people around football. You know, there was the crazy dismissing of the media relations person because of her politics. Yeah, there's just a lot of things that have happened within that organization that shouldn't. And to me, the most egregious is going to be them chasing away a franchise quarterback. You put Deshaun Watson in the right place, Chase. You know, yeah. You know, he can win you a Super Bowl.
Well, and we'll get to some of those potential destinations. You mentioned the ownership, and I agree. When Bob McNair was alive, you know, I felt that they did have a very solid base in ownership, and they were able to build that thing up from the very bottom at the, you know, in 2002 when they came into the league, and they did it pretty fast. Bill O'Brien, I think, took them to another level, even though we have gotten into quite the arguments on the midday show because I wasn't as high on him because he didn't have playoff success, but that's another argument for another day. But when he passed, it's almost they had a plan. Cal McNair's kind of running things now, but it doesn't feel like it's as stable as it was. And with Jack Easterby, you know, in place and doing things, it's not as bad as what Tommy Smith did here, but it just feels like that they're all over the place when it comes to direction, and it's got to be, I guess, Cal McNair stepping it up and trying to right that ship. Yes, they need draft assets, and Deshaun Watson would give them that if they were to move on from him, but this is really not a good place to be from a franchise standpoint of trying to be stable.
A few years ago, this is a team that had a championship defense, in my opinion. You know, front seven especially. Their secondary, average, but their front seven was as good as anybody's. They had Deshaun Watson. They had, you know, maybe one of the best receivers in the league. I mean, they had a pretty prolific offense, but they were never really able to get out of the second round of the playoffs. And it's curious to me. I mean, the Texans to me were set up for success, and then they let Bill O'Brien become the GM, and it just absolutely went sideways. And it just shows you, you know, that you can't overly mortgage your future, especially on an offensive lineman. Laremy Tunsil's a decent, you know, left tackle, but they way overpaid for him. They way overpaid for Clowney. And then, you know, trading Hopkins was just moronic. And so, you know, they set the franchise back. And now here's a team that really doesn't have much of a future because, you know, they traded most of their top draft picks. And now the only way to replenish that is going to be to trade their franchise quarterback. So they're in a tough spot.
Yeah, and they may just, like I said, they may not have a choice on doing that. If he truly is unhappy and truly doesn't want to be there and they just look at it as, you know, we can't sit here. And I heard earlier today, you know, Andrew Brandt was on with Darren and Willie and Mark Dominic, two guys that know the front offices very well, former GMs. And you know, it was thrown out of, okay, do you just wait until late February and early March and then before free agency in the draft and you sit down with Deshaun and say, hey, let's try and work this out. At least to me right now, it appears that they're beyond that, that it's not there. The fact that he hasn't spoken to anyone in that organization, including the new GM, is very, very telling that he is just done and he wants out. And as you said, I think others are going to feel the same way because of just where they are as an organization right now. And it's not only going to set them back, but it may set them back to a point of it's going to be a very long time before they return. I mean, we both remember here of when Bud Adams died, how long it took for the Titans to get back to where they are now. I mean, it took several years and several regime changes and finally Amy Adams Strunk coming in and having to grow into that role, but taking control and then hiring John Robinson. But they went through some very, very tough times. And, you know, Houston is still a fairly new franchise. So, yes, it's a big market, but it's tough right now.
But still, to me, unfathomable that they screwed this up.
Yeah.
I mean, they were maybe a player or two away from being not only a Super Bowl contender, but a Super Bowl favorite. I mean, think about it. Okay, they had Clowney when he was at his peak. You know, they had, you know, J.J. Watt, who's a Hall of Fame player. They had a number of them. D'Amico Ryans on defense. They had a bunch of really good players, and they still could not figure out a way to win. And that has always been puzzling to me because I kept waiting for a while for the Texans to make this great postseason run. And it just never happened. And you're right. I mean, Deshaun Watson, has had his missteps in the postseason. But let me tell you something. They ain't going to sniff the postseason without him. I don't know if David Culley can talk him in, talk him off that ledge. But right now, you're right. And the bad thing is, too, if they're forced to make a deal, often what happens is you don't get full value for your guy. But in this case, with a franchise quarterback, there are a few teams out there that might have, and I'm looking at the Dolphins because they have the draft capital. The Jets do to some degree, but the Dolphins, you know, really could send Tua to Houston along with some draft picks. And that could end up being an interesting deal.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back because you read my mind. That's where I was going to go of a team that I feel like he could walk into and it would be a very, very good situation right away. Plus, what should teams do with unhappy players? What is the fine line? We'll take your calls, 615-737-1025, and your texts on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It's Stillman and Company, Chase McKay, Mark Howard, in for Jared today on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How do you try to go about this, knowing it might take a lot of time and energy to try to mend the fence, even if you may not end up being able to mend the fence?
I mean, I don't know what's going on there. They hired a new coach. You would think the new coach was in on this and solicitous of Watson. If not before, then certainly now. You would hope Watson would take a meeting with the new coach. You would hope Watson's agents would take a meeting with the team. You know, my contact as a GM was always to the agent. That's your gateway. You know, the player, the coach really deals with the player. The front office deals with the agent. And, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of heat from Watson towards the team for reasons I'm sure no one in the media knows about. But, you know, they seem to have this kind of evangelist CEO, and there's a problem. But they have a new GM coming in from the Patriots. They have a new coach. You know, we'd think to me that, hey, you know, it's no longer the GM that traded DeAndre Hopkins away for nothing. Well, let's try to make it a better look.
Andrew Brandt earlier today on Darren Donick and Chase, of course, longtime member of the Packers front office, MMQB, does the media side now. Chase McKay, Mark Howard here with you on Stillman & Company, in for Jared Stillman. Today, as he's under the weather, So, Mark, it is interesting because now the regime that started all this is gone. That's one thing that we were discussing in the first segment. You got a new GM. You got a new coach. Yes, the roster has been depleted because of moves that Bill O'Brien made. The only thing that really is the same is Cal McNair now, or the ownership. Now, I understand that that's really a part of the issue because they supposedly asked Deshaun Watson his advice and they didn't take it, and so he's upset about that. But it does make you wonder that if they were to get things in place and then say, hey, can we talk? Maybe, just maybe, they can fix it, but it just seems like Deshaun Watson is not willing to even talk right now.
And I don't know, Chase, because I'm not there. And, you know, you heard in that interview the hints about Easter Bay and, you know, the evangelist CEO, that politics has sort of intervened within the Texans organization and politics that have skewed to the right. And I'm not going to sit here and make a political opinion. All I'm going to tell you is that for the most part, organizations, especially these days, should be a lot more apolitical and stay out of it, because a lot of players, especially players of color, are a lot more socially conscious and don't often skew to the right. Now, I'm not saying that you're not going to have, you know, different political opinions in the locker room, but that seemed to be driving some of their decisions. And I think it really ticked off some of the players, including Watt, including Watson and people like that. And people lost their jobs. And when you start doing that, a lot of times it's not mentioned up front. But if a player doesn't feel comfortable in that atmosphere, he might want out.
Yeah, it's a dangerous road to go down for sure inside an organization. So you mentioned the Miami Dolphins, and I was going to bring them up because looking at the assets that they have, let's just say it gets to a point where they got to trade him, and they don't have a choice. It's going to be better for everybody, because really the last thing you want, especially at that position of him being the franchise quarterback, you don't want a disgruntled franchise quarterback. It's not going to win anything for anybody. So they decide to put him on the market, and they talk to Miami. Well, Miami has two of their picks that they could give back to Houston from the Tunsil trade. They also have Tua. They have two first-round picks this year and two second-round picks this year. They have the draft capital and the assets to make this happen, and even by giving all of those things up, I believe Deshaun Watson walks into Miami, and not only are they an instant playoff team and fighting with Buffalo for that division, but I think they're an instant contender when you add him. And that's not a slight at Tua. Tua played, you know, half a rookie year. I'm not ready to close the door on him. Houston's getting their picks back, and they're getting a quarterback they can build around. I think that would be as close to a win-win situation for both sides.
I think it's safe to say the Dolphins have not had a lot of star quality at quarterback over the years. You know, they've had some good quarterbacks, but Deshaun Watson would represent the most star quality they've had since, obviously, the gold standard, Dan Marino, departed the scene. I think it would be a huge boost. Listen, I have family that lives in South Florida, and the Dolphins are liked. They're not loved, but this would... Boy, this would inject that franchise with rocket fuel and would be a huge boost. While on the other hand, whatever draft assets, you know, that you mentioned they'd have to give up for him would be worth it, because they're there right now. They're looking for the quarterback that's going to put them over the top. Yeah, Tua, after a year, I kind of cracked up you know, listening to some assessments that already some people had given up on him, which I think is absurd. You know, this is a kid a year removed from hip surgery, you know, and he's still, I don't know if he was still, you know, back to his former self. I don't know if he'll ever get back to his former self. I'm not a doctor on that issue, but it's like you said, there are some logical trade partners. You know, there are some other teams that would love to have him but don't have the assets. And I would say the line starts with the Dolphins. The Jets, of course, have a lot of draft assets. You know, you've got those two. And, you know, Sam Darnold and maybe the assessment in Houston, maybe David and Nick Caserio's had a lot of time to see Sam Darnold. Maybe they view him as a better risk than Tua. So, you know, you've already got two teams right there. I'm sure the Steelers would weigh in. I don't know if the Steelers have enough to give them, but that would certainly be an intriguing acquisition by Pittsburgh. But they're just not known for being that aggressive. And I don't know if Big Ben is ready to step away.
It doesn't feel like he is, that's for sure. And, you know, Pittsburgh's always been the type to kind of home, you know, they build through the draft. They build homegrown players. And so I could see that. The thing with the Jets and Sam Darnold, now I've never been a huge Sam Darnold fan. I always felt like he was good. He was never going to be elite. But I also will say that I don't really know if he's gotten a fair shake of it either, because he's been on such a bad team. Adam Gase is a joke of a head coach. It was never going to work, in my opinion, there. So do you take the assets that the Jets have draft-wise and keep Darnold, maybe trade the number two overall pick, get more assets, build around him, stick with it, or looking at it, like you're saying, you have a shot at Deshaun Watson, trade some of those assets, get him. Either one probably is not a bad play. Deshaun Watson obviously going to help you sooner, but they also have other holes. Whereas Miami, it's like I said, it's as close to a win-win as it can possibly be, because Miami can give up the assets, but then you can win now. So if you're Deshaun Watson, which he's not going to necessarily have the say in the team if he ends up getting traded, he would probably love to go to Miami over New York. But I feel like that the Jets, it would still be a few years off.
Yeah, I think Houston in both cases, and I don't know if they want this. They don't take themselves out of position to draft a franchise quarterback, but they would be getting a quarterback that they can start in exchange. Obviously, one not nearly as good as Deshaun Watson, but you know, at least they might have that option. But I agree with you. I think those two teams, at least in my mind, sort of head the list. The sort of sleeper is San Francisco and what they have to offer. And I don't know how San Francisco really feels about Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, a lot of people see maybe a three-team trade with Garoppolo, or a four-team trade. I saw one where Aaron Rodgers gets traded, but I don't see the Packers doing that. I think that is absolutely absurd. But I could see Garoppolo maybe going back to New England. But beyond that, just a two-team deal, you know, I would say Dolphins, Jets, and maybe a team like the Niners.
Well, and we talked about it the other day. Schefter put out that tweet talking about quarterback movement, that it could be 18, and he would take the over of just overall quarterback movement this offseason. I mean, that's a high number.
That's a crazy number.
It's a crazy number, but you never know. I mean, because Deshaun Watson could be that domino effect that if he moves, then that's going to, depending on where he goes. So if he goes to Miami, you're going to have Tua that moves. There's two. If he goes to the Jets, you're going to have Darnold that moves. Garoppolo, the same thing. So, I mean, it just could snowball out of control with one movement, with one guy.
And you know, Chase, you know, just going back, you know, we talked about this in the first segment. 2 years ago, 2018, okay, 2.5 years ago, Houston was 11-5. You know, that Watson's coming off a great year. You know, Hopkins had over 100 catches. J.J. Watt had 16 sacks. Jadeveon Clowney had 9. Carlos Hyde was a 1,000-yard rusher. You know, but you also had Tyrann Mathieu on the team. You know, Whitney Mercilus was you know, more in his prime. But it's amazing how fast in this league fortunes change. And with a couple of bad deals, this is what happened to the Houston Texans. Honey, I shrunk the Texans.
So what do you think about this? This is David in Murfreesboro on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Simply put, don't put it past Mickey Loomis.
Yeah, but they're capped out. The Saints are just in no position to make this deal unless they want to start cutting. See, and this is the other thing people have to understand. The cap situations for most teams out there are not going to be good. This is not the year you demand a trade. No. And this is what they might say to Watson. They go, listen, you know, let's at least play this another year. And then we'll talk about things after 2021, because a lot of teams are hamstrung by their cap situations because it's going down and just can't accommodate an acceptable deal.
Well, certainly going to be one to watch for sure. Players showing that they have more of a voice and more control. The beginning of this saga for sure. Chase McKay, Mark Howard in today for Jared Stillman on Stillman & Company. When we come back, now that Houston has a coach, all head coaching positions in the NFL are full. So of these new coaches, of these new hires, who has the best chance right out of the gates? We'll discuss that when we come back. We'll take your calls and your texts, 615-737-1025. It's ESPN, 1025 The Game. Stillman & Company, ESPN, 1025 The Game, delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with five-star service. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard hanging out with you on a Thursday. We got Chris Sanders coming up in the next segment, Forever Titans wide receiver who hung out with me on Monday, so it'll be good to catch up with him. Teron Davenport, he's down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter at 4 o'clock. The Crispinator, Terry Crisp, 4:30 to talk Preds, and then Wes Rucker will go up to Knoxville, Vols 24/7. We'll talk to him at 5:15. So a loaded show here today on this Thursday. So new coaches in the NFL. David Culley was the last hire. The Houston Texans finally have found their man. That got finalized last night. And so all of the head coaching vacancies this year have been filled up. So now the question is, of these new hires, who has the best chance to be successful out of the gates? You got Arthur Smith, of course, leaves the Titans. He goes to the Atlanta Falcons, takes over that job, takes Dean Pease with him. So a pretty good hire there. Dan Campbell goes to the Detroit Lions to bite off kneecaps and all of that stuff. Already mentioned David Culley with Houston taking that. Urban Meyer leaves the Fox Sports booth and college football to go to Jacksonville. You have Brandon Staley with the Chargers leaving the other team in L.A. to go over there with them. And so then you have Robert Saleh leaving the 49ers to take over the New York Jets, and Nick Sirianni going to the Philadelphia Eagles taking over that. So a lot of new coaches. You know, Urban Meyer obviously has head coaching experience in college, but new coaches here in the NFL. So, Mark, how would you answer the question of out of the gates, the coach that could have the most success in their rookie year?
I'm going to say Nick Sirianni. I was thinking Brandon Staley, but the AFC West, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough to conquer. I still think the Chargers are going to be much better next year. They're going to be a playoff contender. But Sirianni could win the NFC East. You know, you look around, even the Cowboys getting Dak back. I've got real questions about Ezekiel Elliott. I've got real questions about that defense. You know, the Cowboys have some work to do. And you wonder, you know, with their cap situation, how they're going to manage that. But all that aside, I'll go with Sirianni. I know a lot of people might not mention him, but I think the Eagles, if they get healthy, and I think Wentz is going to come back. I just do. I just think that it would be hard for me to imagine, you know, him just taking the plunge from being as good as he was a couple of years ago, you know, to not being able to play in the league.
Yeah, I feel like with the Eagles, they chose the quarterback over the head coach. That's just kind of how it feels to me, that they know the contract that they had invested in Wentz, and they just said, hey, we're going to have to make a change and stick with it. So I think that is certainly a very good one. For me, I'm going to go with one of your other choices with the Chargers. I think that was maybe the best job available simply because of the quarterback situation that they have there, and they have a good team around him. I liked Anthony Lynn, and I think a lot of people liked Anthony Lynn. I just don't think he was a head coach. I think he's a good coordinator, but he's just not one of those guys that can be the CEO and run an organization. But they overachieved at times. They finished the year strong. I think they have the foundation, and Brandon Staley is another one of those just young up-and-comers that is going to come into a really good situation and I think be able to build them. Now, that division, as you mentioned, is an interesting one, but because the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. They're just not. They're not for the next few years do I believe that they're going away. But I think that he's got the tools to be able to put something together right out of the gates.
No doubt. You know, he became sort of one of the sexy coordinators with the job that he did with the Rams. No question about it. And you look at the Chargers, and again, you know, injuries kind of neutered them last year. And for Staley, you know, to come back and or to cross over going from the Rams to the Chargers. If the Chargers are healthy, they're dangerous. I agree with you. And, you know, they've got a good young quarterback.
Now, long term, after giving it a few years, I would put Arthur Smith in that category. It's all going to depend on, you know, who's under center for him. Matt Ryan, maybe he's got a year or two left there. They got a few holes they got to fill. But I've always liked their ownership situation with Arthur Blank. I think they got a good foundation there in Atlanta that he can build around. It's just all going to depend on the quarterback. But I think that, all bias aside here, being in Nashville, I think Arthur Smith is a really, really good hire, and he's made good hires on his staff that's going to help him have success moving forward.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys on your show with Willie and Darren thoroughly dissected the Urban Meyer move. I just sort of feel like I go by the Popeye the Sailor Man theory, and that is I am what I am, and I just don't see Urban Meyer suddenly changing and being able to literally stomach defeat in Jacksonville. And I just think two bad years there, or two rebuilding years there, will just eat him alive.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to be. And he got asked that in the press conference. He got asked, you know,
I know he said, I got to lighten up during practice. And I never believe that. I never believe, especially a head coach, you know, who says he's going to change his essential nature. It's happened sometimes. It happened with Tom Coughlin, where, you know, he stopped being, as autocratic as he normally was with the Giants, and he won two Super Bowls. But oftentimes, you know, these head coaches, especially these college head coaches, just can't change. And I don't see Urban Meyer being that guy. And it's not a knock. The guy is, you know, one of the, you know, maybe one of the top five coaches of all time in college football. But sometimes the pro game just isn't for you. And it's just, you know, in my mind, college football and the NFL require two different temperaments to coach, I believe. They're a little more similar now, but even so, a lot of these guys just can't handle losing.
Yeah, and on top of that, not only do you have the head coach that's going to have to adjust to, you know, losing and learning what it's like to lose, but Trevor Lawrence didn't do a lot of losing in his collegiate career. And when you get a guy, whether it's a quarterback or not, from a program like a Clemson or an Alabama or Ohio State that they just don't lose a lot, there is that adjustment of, yeah, it's not like that in the NFL. You lose three games in a year in college, you're not going anywhere. You do that in the NFL, and you're probably winning a division. So it's going to be an adjustment on both fronts. So I agree. This whole Urban Meyer thing, it just seems I don't really understand why they're experimenting with this. Maybe we'll be wrong. Who knows?
I'm glad they are. I think it's a great story. Yeah, and it really solves a lot of the sports talk and barroom arguments. You know, how would, you know, Nick Saban do in the NFL if he went back there again? Or, you know, how would Urban Meyer? Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, because you've seen it work. I mean, you've seen Jimmy Johnson and Pete Carroll. You know, they've had success because Pete Carroll kind of went the other way with it. He was actually in the NFL and then went to USC and then came back. But you know, he's had success, and Barry Switzer, of course, Cowboys fan,
Barry Switzer.
Yeah. I don't really count
we
that.
We can coach that team.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I've always looked at it. Cause I grew up a Cowboys fan, you know, during those days, as a kid in the '90s, and you know, those were Jimmy's teams, but, he's, I guess, in there technically. Robert Saleh is, I think, a really solid hire too. His name's been, you know, mentioned for head coaching jobs for the last couple of years. The only thing is it's the Jets. And I just don't know if they're going to do the things right above him to make him be successful. And that's the only part that really worries me with him.
I think he's got a chance to be good. I mean, he has obviously proven himself, but we never know. We always hear about these hot young coordinators that become head coaches, and all of a sudden, you know, they just absolutely epically fail when they get moved up to that number one seat.
Yep. So a fun conversation to have. And we'll ask Chris Sanders, Forever Titans wide receiver, what he thinks about that. He will join us next. Stillman and Company, Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared today on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yes, it is. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared today. He hopes to be back in the saddle again tomorrow. We say hello to Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, my buddy, my pal from Silly Underdog Picks. And he was hanging out with me on Monday. So what's up? How are you?
Hey, buds. How you doing, man? You doing all right? You doing good?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm better now that you're here for sure. I was just Mark and I were just talking about this, of all the new coaches in the NFL, and the final vacancy was filled with David Culley taking over Houston. Now, we'll get to Houston and that mess in a second. But when you think about the new hires in the NFL, a lot of guys that this is their first crack at it,
true,
or all of them really, except for Urban Meyer. Who do you think has the best chance of being successful out of the gates?
I think it's going to be hard for everybody. And the reason why I said it's going to be hard for everybody is because they're coming in, and I know we're talking about COVID and everything. They're not going to be able to come in and build a relationship with their players. That's going to be the tough part. So I think the coach that's going to be successful is the one who did it like, you know, Nick Saban, to really make sure he had everything under control and make sure that he's communicating with his players. So it's going to be tough for everybody. I can't say who's going to be successful or who's not going to be successful, but because of the COVID, I just think that the coach that goes in there and really builds a relationship with the organization, build a relationship with their players, the best is the coach is going to do good. It's kind of hard to kind of figure it out because of the COVID, because they're not going to actually be able to be there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talked when you were in on Monday. We talked about Aaron Rodgers and that whole situation, which of course he's now kind of backtracked a little bit because the it's worn off out of the heat of the moment. But Deshaun Watson has not. He has officially asked for a trade. He wants out of Houston. He's not talking to anybody. No matter how this plays out, whether he's back or whether he isn't, what does that do to the locker room, knowing that your guy is not happy?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, you know, you have Watson. Watson is a great guy. He has great character, and he loves his city. So if he's disgruntled, then a lot of guys are going to be disgruntled. I mean, when you have a guy like that gives his whole heart on the field and he doesn't want to be there, I mean, it affects so many things. I mean, he's not going to put 110% in the weight room or actually be on the field because he doesn't want to be there. I just, I just wish that we can, as Americans or just people, that when we have our differences, that we can sit down and hash these things out. But the one thing that you can do in the NFL, if you don't like where you're at, you can pick up and go. And I just think sometimes we sit and we work things out. It might work out and it might not work out. But I think that if Watson just says, you know what, okay, you know, I'm not going to blast this out on the radio. I'm not going to blast it out, you know, in the newspaper. Let me sit with the owner. Let me sit with the head coaches and say, okay, you know what, I don't like it here. Let me go get a trade. But I just don't agree with him sending it, you know, out in the public.
Chris, by the way, David Culley started his coaching career coaching for Boots Donnelly in 1978.
Dang.
How great is that?
Man, it is. I mean, Boots Donnelly's a good guy. One of the guys that he used to coach was Coach Uwe, the coach that I coached with at Montgomery Bell Academy. And I just keep hearing all the stories about that. So I think that's pretty cool.
All right, Chris, you're a guy who's taking good care of himself.
Yes.
You see Tom Brady out there still going at 43. How amazing is that to you?
You know what, Mark? It really is. I mean, just watching him come in the league and, you know, I watched him at the combine. I mean, he looked out of shape. He looked like he weighed about 300 pounds, and he looked like he could run the 40 in 12.5. I mean, that's how bad he looked. But just to watch him, just watching him become a complete player. And when you talk about a complete player, I mean, he reads defenses, he motivates his team to win. And, you know, the one thing I'm really excited about this year, and when I say this year, you're going to be like, what? He's becoming just a mature guy. And when I say a mature guy is when he was with the Patriots, he was one of those guys that would rant and rave, and he would make mistakes, and he would throw his helmet and get mad and yell at the defense, yell at the offense. Look at what he did this year with the Tampa Bay Bucks. I mean, when he came in, you know, they didn't really know each other. Everybody just knew he was Tom Brady. But look how he motivated his players. And when he would make mistakes, I know he would throw his helmet maybe once in a while, but instead of throwing his helmet, he's talking to his players. He's talking to his coaches. He's talking to the defense. That just shows you he didn't just mature as a football player. He was maturing as a leader. And I think that's what makes this year so special. Everybody knows he's the GOAT. Everybody knows he went to 10 Super Bowls. But the one thing that I'm impressed about Brady this year is how he was talking to people and motivating people in spite of the mistakes that he made. So that's what I'm excited about this year about.
When you see guys like Tyreek Hill and
– oh, my gosh.
Well, but I'm just saying the way the Chiefs and, you know, other NFL teams – use their receivers now, moving them around, you know, putting them in motion before the snap. Do you scream at the television because you really could have been, with your speed, you really could have been that guy?
Mark Harrod, I want to fight you right now. I mean, for you.
No, I say this out of love. I mean, you had a good career, but am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is, just imagine me going in motion. I'm not tooting my horn. I mean, those guys like Tyreek Hill and Hardman and all those great receivers, Jefferson from the Minnesota Vikings, they use those guys in different ways to where you can't go man-to-man. I mean, you can't go man-to-man, but you can't really come up and press these guys because they're going in motion and it creates space. So if I was in that type of offense to where I was going in motion and, you know, playing in the slot and doing speed sweeps, my career would have been totally different. Me and Kevin Dyson talk about this all the time, to where if we would have got the targets, the, you know, being in motion and getting targeted like, you know, 12 and 13 times, we would have had a stellar career. But at the end of the day, man, Tyreek Hill makes plays. I mean, he just absolutely made plays. I mean, the one thing that he does so special is what he does after the catch. I know we get excited about, you know, A.J. Brown here when he catches the ball, but when Tyreek Hill catches that thing, man, he just gets up to top speed so fast, and he makes simple plays into big plays.
Talking to Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, along those lines, because I think it's fascinating – receivers are also just built differently from the ground up. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are things that you're doing with the receivers at NBA that weren't done with you when you were coming up through high school.
Yeah, I think the one thing that it is, I mean, every receiver is built different. I mean, you have tall ones, you have short ones, you have guys that their hips are real tight. But I think when with me, when I'm coaching my receivers, I teach them all the techniques. I teach them how to get off the press. I teach them how to, you know, get the guy off the spot and all those things. But you got to understand what the kid does best. If a kid can't do a certain drill or he can't do a certain technique, then I won't allow him to do it. I make sure I put him in position to win. And I think too, you know, especially Ben, you know, in high school and in the pros, is understanding the technique and understanding the skill of being a wide receiver. Because I get so upset, you know, when we look at a receiver and say, okay, he's too small. Well, he's not big enough, and he's all this and all these things. But it's understanding how to run routes. It's understanding how to give the guy the spot. It's understanding how to read coverages. It's understanding that if a DB's played a certain way, that I got to understand that I got to have a game plan at the line of scrimmage and at the top of the route. So, yeah, they may be built different, but the technique is still the same.
So, A.J. Brown, as you brought him up, we've seen two amazing years out of him. And he's, mm-hmm. you know, even been banged up at times. He's had 2,000-yard receiving years in his first two. What does he need to be doing this offseason to take an even bigger step? Because I always look at year three as, right. you know, you can take a, you know, a generous step between year one and year two. But 2 to 3, that's the giant one.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And I think, you know, A.J. Brown has done a great job. You know, the first year he came out, you know, everybody's talking about, can he run routes and can he do these things? And he proved it to us that he can run routes. But I think the one thing that he's going to have to do, and we all seen it during the season, is he has to stay healthy. I mean, he's got to figure out a way to get his ankle strong. He's got to figure out to get hamstrings right. And then also, I know he had surgery on his knees. I think the sky's the limit. I mean, he's proven all the critics wrong. Everybody was talking, can he get off the press? And, you know, last year he struggled with that, you know, especially when he played against the Saints. But he's answered all those questions. He's changed those question marks into periods. But the one thing that he's going to have to do is, just like Tom Brady, he's got to figure out a way to stay healthy. He's got to figure out the way to get his ankle strong. He's got to figure out to make sure his hamstrings can handle all that power. And if he does that, I think he's going to be one of the best wide receivers in the league.
Mark?
Chris, what about you know, you look at the Chiefs and mm-hmm. just how they use their receivers,
man.
And how they're really interchangeable. They don't always line up in the same spots.
Right.
How tough does that make to cover them?
Oh, it's tough because you can't double one person. And I just think that's what makes this Kansas City Chiefs, you know, offense so special. Eric Bieniemy is doing a phenomenal job. Andy Reid is doing a phenomenal job. But what they do is they put these guys in position to succeed. So if just say if we're in a 3-by-1, that's three wide receivers to the left and one to the right, and you have the number one wide receiver going motion. That's the first receiver on the outside. He goes in motion. How are you going to double these guys? And if you try to double Tyreek that's going in motion, you can't, because now it leaves Hardeman open. Then all of a sudden it leaves Kelce open. Then you have those other receivers that we don't know that have the capability of making plays. So, you know, it's not just covering these guys. It's about what Bieniemy and Andy Reid is doing. He's putting these guys in position to make plays, and they start with the formation.
He is forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Always good
yes,
to
sir.
Talk to you, my friend. Have a great weekend, and we'll do it again soon.
Man, you're my hero. Good to see you, Mark.
All right, bud.
Appreciate you.
There you go. Chris Sanders, forever Titans wide receiver. Always enjoy our conversations with him. When we come back, we'll talk Preds as they sweep the Chicago Blackhawks with back-to-backs, and they head to Tampa for another two-game series in this crazy 2021 year. It is Stillman and Company, Chase McCabe, Mark Howard, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. In for Jared today on ESPN, 102.5 The Game.